Good morning. It's 11:07 here at News Radio 1580 WCCF, and welcome to the Dr. Triana Show. Our program is brought to you by the Triana Center for Hormone Balance, located on Harbor Boulevard, Port Charlotte, Florida. Give us a call here. This is a live medical talk show in which we encourage you to participate. So call at any point during the show at 206-1580 or toll-free 888-441-1580. Those are the phone numbers if you have a question or a comment. And now, our host of the program, Dr. Elizabeth Triana.
And good morning, everyone. Good morning. Oh, I hear it's going to be a little stormy today. Nice weather to cuddle up on the couch with your honey and maybe read a book or something else. What do you think? I love rain.
Yeah, I do too, but I usually end up sleeping. It puts me to sleep.
And I love to see the beautiful, the trees, everything becomes so nice and green.
And it keeps the pollen down too. That's another great thing. And you get a free car wash when it rains. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, that yellow dust, the pollen. Remember we were talking about that?
Oh, it's been really bad.
It's been really, really bad. And, you know, there was an article I was looking at about the pollen and things you should do. Remember we discussed that before?
Yeah.
And one of the things you should do is if you already know 2 to 3 weeks ahead of time that you are going to be inundated with pollen and you have a lot of allergies, then you should start taking your allergy medication. So it's really important that, and this is a recommendation from the allergy, it's called the ACCAI, the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. And they said that this is going to be one of the worst seasons. So they say one of the most effective therapies is immunotherapy, but that therapy can last from 3 to 5 years. Immunotherapy is also known as allergy shots. Okay. So they recommend that if you are going to be using, you know, talk to your doctor, and if you're going to be needing medications for allergies, to discuss that and to try to take that medication 2 to 3 weeks before the season. And what's really important too, for example, like today, check for the weather reports for pollen and mold counts. And during allergy season, keep the windows closed. And I will tell you, one of my favorite things to do is to sit on the porch. I have a wraparound porch and sit outside. And, you know, screens really don't keep the pollen out.
Mm.
And I have asthma, which I'm sure you could hear sometimes when I cough. And I never was a smoker. And I love sitting outside because I read, I study, and it's just so beautiful and quiet. In my garden. So guess what? There's pollen out there. So they recommend during allergy season, keep your windows closed. Some allergists will also tell you to leave your air condition on. It said pollen counts are the highest in the midday and in the afternoon to try to stay inside during these times. Now, and that's also when the sun is the highest too. And after spending time outdoors, shower, wash your hair, and change your clothes. Because remember, that pollen that you have in your hair, in your clothes, is on you. So in order to try to eliminate the allergen, because an allergen is something that causes allergies, then you have to try to eliminate that. For example, if somebody says, oh, they're allergic to cats. Well, you're not going to put them in a room full of cats.
Right.
You know, I mean, that doesn't make sense. So you need to wash your hair, change your clothes. If you do need to do outside chores, then they recommend what's called a NIOSH rated 95 filter mask. and take your allergy medication beforehand. So I guess you'd have to wear a mask.
I can think of a couple items that aren't on the list, too, that I'll bet you are important. And as a Home Depot employee, I've got to tell you this one. Change your air filters in your air conditioning system very often. I don't know what they recommend, whether it's once a month or once every couple months, but they have some really good filters now that filter out that pollen. For your air conditioning system.
Well, see, I didn't know
that. And that's something that a lot of people don't think of, but that filter. And you know, Betsy, they have something now. They've had it for a few years now. They have there's a little scent thing that you can actually tape onto or stick onto your air filter. And what it'll do is it'll put whatever scent throughout your whole home while the air conditioner is running. It's really nice.
Really?
So there's like a forest scent, a spring rain. There's one that smells like you're in the tropics, like coconut a little bit or whatever. There's several of those to go with. But I'm just wondering if those indoor pollen or indoor filter machines will work.
There are filter machines out there. And, you know, I don't know enough about those to which ones to recommend or not. But, you know, putting scents, some people also... scents can trigger an allergic reaction.
Oh, yeah.
So we have to be careful, even perfumes. In fact, a lot of times in doctor's offices, they will be a sign that says, please refrain, keep from using perfume.
When you come in.
Yes. Especially if you're going to go to an allergist and you're going to sit and, you know, and you're going to go get allergy shots. But perfumes can trigger allergies, too.
My roommate, he uses this all free and clear laundry detergent. Can't even have the dye or the scent in the laundry even.
Same way with me. I have to use all clear, and I have to use Downy that doesn't have a scent usually.
Right.
Unless I find one that doesn't bother me. But the you really have to, because there's a lot of, you know, in new clothes, too, there's a lot of chemicals that they put in clothes, and you have to be careful. I know that certain detergents will cause me to have a problem, and I also know that because bleach, if I smell bleach right straight out, I'll start coughing. So, you know, everyone has to find out what are their triggers. If anybody has a question, please give us a call at 206-1580. You know, we love phone calls.
We love to hear from you.
We love to hear from you. And, you know, last week, I have to thank the feedback I got about the show in tribute to my husband. So many people said it was so beautiful. And I want to thank everybody for listening and all my friends and who have been so supportive through this very, very difficult time for me. I feel very blessed that I have a wonderful family and wonderful friends. And one of the most important things for me is that I love what I do so much. You know, it's such a pleasure to take care of my patients. When a patient comes in and says, can you help me? And I say, I can help you. It's such a wonderful feeling when they come back. Oh, I feel better. Oh, you hit it on the spot. Thank you so much. And it just makes me feel so wonderful. You know, I've always wanted to be a doctor since the age of 4. And now I am just blown away by the great response we're getting from the BioT hormone program. Mm-hmm. You know, I've discussed that before. And it is just so wonderful. Patients feeling better, couples coming in and they're giggling, they hold hands. You know, and people want to have more enthusiasm. They're not having night sweats or hot flashes. The women and men aren't having night sweats. So they're sleeping better. You know, sleep is so important. that's when our hormones get restored. And if you don't have a good night's sleep, that's a major problem. It affects our whole health. You know, people used to think you could forego sleep. You cannot. Your body needs sleep. And it's actually recommended 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night.
At least.
At least.
And you have
and quality sleep. We're not talking about, you know, in a train station sitting down sleeping.
Or noise around.
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend that I work with at Home Depot. He's in his 60s. And he says, I told him, I said, I can't wait till tomorrow. I'm going to sleep like 8 to 10 hours. And he says, oh, my goodness, I can't sleep that much. The most I can ever sleep is 5 hours or four. And it's not because he's distracted or has to work. It's because he just says as he got older, he noticed he couldn't sleep as much. So what happens there?
Many times older people will need less sleep. And also it's important to note what is the quality of sleep. You know, there is a big problem with patients who have sleep apnea. And sleep apnea affects your health. You're a greater risk for heart attack, stroke, actually greater risk for diabetes. Mm-hmm. Your hormones don't get restored. And remember, hormone deficiency affects that our sleep because it affects our muscles, our brain. That's very important to look at. So we'll take a little break. This is Dr. Elizabeth Triana.
Another morning where you just drag yourself out of bed after hitting the snooze button 5 times. Now you're driving to work. It's like a zombie. That lack of energy and poor sleep every night is just one sign that your hormones may be out of whack. Time to get them back in balance with Bio-T. Both men and women need testosterone and suffer without it. And all you need is a quick little test. My testosterone was too low, my estrogen too high, and it meant that I was just foggy and irritable every day until I learned about Bio-T Medical. Bio-T is all natural. It's not synthetic. It's not those shots or messy creams that you hear a lot about. With Bio-T, all you need, 2-3 treatments a year, as opposed to painful shots that you're getting every week. Come out of the fog, feel youthful again, get that libido back up, feel happy, even maintain your weight loss.
Hi, this is Dr. Elizabeth Triana. Let me balance your hormones with Bio-T. Call me at 941-625-1990. For your appointment.
Oh, sorry, I was sleeping.
No. He's kidding.
It's 11:20 here at News Radio 1580. And yes, sleep is very, very important. I feel fantastic today because I got enough sleep.
Yes.
Luckily, for once.
You know, if you all heard the little commercial about the word libido. Libido means your sex drive. Are you interested in sex? And you know, I have a lot of patients who say to me, I love, you know, a woman or a man. It's most, and the women will say, I love my husband. I love, he's the most wonderful person on earth, they'll say, but I'm just not interested in sex anymore. And, you know, sexual intimacy is a very important part of who we are as humans. And it should never be disregarded. In other words, as I've said, an intimate life should be a forever life. Everyone wants to be loved, held, touched, adored. I think everyone does want that. And want somebody to share your life with. So if you have a wonderful relationship, but you're just not interested, then one of the things we need to look at is it could be the medications you're on, the fact that your hormones may not be balanced. It could be the fact, you know, also people can become depressed or stressed out. But there's something that can be done. So don't just live your life and say, well, I just don't care anymore about intimacy. Because that's a beautiful part of a relationship.
Too many people give up. And I've heard so many people say, well, I'm too old for that. Or my best years are behind me. And of course, you're going to say to that.
No, an intimate life should be a forever life. Doesn't matter if you're younger or older, if you're 90 years old. We are humans. We want that intimacy. It's very important. It's good for our health. It's good for our heart. So, you know, I started the sexual health tip of the week. And if anybody wants to call us, you can give us a call at 206-1580. And I really want to stress, little details are so important. And this is such a good little detail to help what I would say maybe spice up your romance or tell that other person that you still care and you're interested. And what I say is write love notes. Now, I don't mean just texting, write love notes. Let that person know that you're thinking of them. You know, you can put a love note in their drawer. You can put it on over the refrigerator. You can put it on the kitchen sink. Surprise that person with little love notes. And I don't mean to be salacious or graphic. I'm trying to mean little notes. I care about you. I'm thinking of you. Let's have a date night tonight. You know, those little things. If you maybe during the day call your significant person and tell them, you know what? I really miss you today.
This is something, and I'm just speaking for myself. I don't want to speak for all guys in general, but I think a lot of men out there get so busy in their lives working and just taking care of business that they forget these little things like the love. I wish I'd have done that. I really wish I would have done that in my last, you know, relationship. That would have made a huge difference to that person.
And if you want to text, and, you know, remember, anything you put out there, texting or even can be hacked eventually. We know that. But just keep it simple. I miss you. I'm thinking of you. Maybe leave little notes. You know, somebody goes to get their clothes in their drawer and there's a little note. I love you. Let's get together. You know, yeah. I mean, just simple little things. Knowing that that person, that they're thinking of you. They really want to be with you.
Dear Hacker, I hope you're having a great day too.
I just want to say, you know, this is such a simple little sexual health tip. Because remember, the largest sex organ is the brain. So if, remember that song, Anticipation?
Oh, yeah. Everyone can tell. Let's have someone call right now and tell us what product on television used that song. I mean, you got to be a 70s baby like me or someone, you know, a little bit older like I am to remember this. But tell me, call and tell us what product that was. And if you want to name the brand, too, you can. But there was a specific product that used to use that song in their ads.
Really? You know, I don't remember. But it's true. Anticipation is part of the romance, too.
It was something in a bottle. I'll just give you a hint. It was something in a bottle that they were waiting for it to come out.
Oh, I remember
now.
Do you
remember now? Okay. Well, call us here.
Something you use in hamburgers, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Or French fries.
Yep.
Well, we're supposed to be healthy here.
Yeah, right. There's no healthy ketchup, huh?
Ah, you just gave it away.
Oh, sorry. I did. Oh, no. Okay.
Well, ketchup has a lot of sugar.
Well, anyway, yeah, it does. But, Anticipation. I remember that song well.
Yes.
Carly Simon.
Carly Simon's a great song. And we know that anticipation is very, very important for part of the romance. Build it up. You know, let that other person, I'm thinking about you. Let's plan a date. How about let's go out for a romantic dinner or make a romantic dinner at home?
And it's a heck of a lot better than ketchup.
And there's less sugar in wine.
Yeah, right. That's a great tip, though. That really is.
I think that's a great tip. Now, I do have another tip. Now, this is the physical health tip of the week. And this is so easy. Get a scale. Get a scale and weigh yourself once a week and keep a diary of it. You know, what do they say? Numbers don't lie.
Right.
And I don't mean and a scale for you and a scale for food. Because one of the things that weighing or measuring your portions teaches you after a while, you know what the size of a portion. Most people overestimate the portion of meat, protein, even pasta.
Oh, guess what? We both know the size of pasta, what it should be.
Half
the size of your fist.
I know.
I couldn't get over that. I eat like five of those in a plate. And what's the one for steak? How big should a steak
well,
be?
Well, a deck of cards.
Cards, yep. That's not very much.
Well, that's a portion, and you should, you know, that's what they say. You know, that's okay. How much.
Well, you can always fill in with healthy things, can't you? Like
a
eat
lot
more
of
salad, a
green,
lot of greens.
Green vegetables. And, you know, one of the things that is recommended, too, is getting what's in season. Because what's in season is going to taste better than something that's not in season.
Right.
And I think that's really important. So, another very interesting. So if you have any tips you'd like to give us, you can call us at 206-1580 for everyone out there who's listening. Maybe you have a romantic tip. Or maybe you have a physical health tip, which, again, weighing yourself is very important. Knowing what your weight is and weighing your food gives you an idea, if at least at the beginning, if you're starting to learn what is portions. And we've talked about that. Read labels. Mm-hmm. Remember, we've talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
So, and in that spirit, there is an information, as we know, the number one killer of men and women is still vascular disease. And though, and this was an article that was in Circulation, which is the journal for the American Heart Association, we know that mortality, which means death rates from heart disease, are starting to decline from 1970 to 2010. But the decline was less in the South. So the counties with the highest death rates from, at the beginning of the study, the highest death rates from heart disease were concentrated in the Northeast. But now they're concentrated in the South. So we know that community cultural differences affect the death rate of vascular disease. If you look at this shift that they said the stronger concentrations are now in the South and Southern Appalachia. Again, this is reflected in the cultural and the diet and also access to health care.
And income level should be on there, too,
yes.
Because we know Appalachia is a very, very low-income area.
So, again, they found that race and education could play a role. Now, education. I think the important thing, and we've discussed this before, why it's so important, and I'm very committed to education for young people, is because the family members are the one who teach the young people the eating habits and what is good food, what is not good food. So if you start young and teach children what are healthy foods that you could eat and how much to eat and cut back on refined sugars, carbohydrates, that makes a big difference in not only the obesity rate, but also in vascular disease. So being physicians who work with all different cultures and races, we need to know, for example, what is it that family members are doing or eating that can affect their children and actually affect themselves. In some households, the parents are smoking. So the children will see this and not know that, well, you know, smoking is just not good for you. And they'll see their parents or relatives smoking, and they will see and think, well, hey, my parents smoke. Why can't I smoke?
That's what happened to me.
Really?
I had a mom who smoked all the time in the car. And when I got to be about 16 or 17 years old, of course, there was peer pressure. But I just figured, well, mom smokes. Hey, this, you know, this must be something that's cool to do. And this was during a time where we really weren't sure yet how dangerous it was. But then luckily I quit later. But unfortunately, this is a thing that a lot of, you know, kids grow up with. When parents smoke, they're setting that the bar in an unhealthy place.
Yes, correct. So I know in my family, my parents didn't smoke. They wouldn't let anybody smoke in the house or in the cars. So that was, even guests could not smoke in the house, which, thank goodness, because I had asthma, and smoking's so unhealthy for you.
Yeah, it really is.
It's just so unhealthy. Well, we're going to take a little break. This is Dr. Elizabeth Triana.
Okay, guys, listen up. You feel like a 70-year-old man in a 45-year-old body, can't work out like you used to. Maybe your testosterone is low. You know, testosterone is the dipstick of men's health. Levels decline after 30, accelerated by a variety of environmental chemicals that can convert the reduced testosterone you are producing to estrogen. That's the female hormone, and not good. You can change all that at the Triana Center for Hormone Balance. There, your hormones are measured, a thorough physical done, and a program to restore your hormone balance is laid out for you. Bioidentical hormone pellets are inserted beneath the skin every 4 to 5 months by a certified BioT physician. 15 minutes and you're on your way to feeling better, having more energy, improved muscle tone, and renewed interest in your sex partner. Yay! Still not convinced? Go to the BioT website. That is BioTEmedical.com. Then call 625-1990 for an appointment that will change your life.
Hi, this is Dr. Elizabeth Triana. Let me balance your hormones with BioT. Call me at 941-625-1990 1990 for your appointment.
It's 11:35 and the phone lines are wide open here at News Radio 1580 WCCF. Call us at 206-1580, toll free 888-441-1580. I hope Dorothy calls today. She usually has something cool to say. We got to get her to call in.
You know, we do love callers and comments, and I thought that the sexual health tip of the week was really nice.
Yeah.
Make little love notes. I think that's really good. So we're going to start. We're going to talk about something that's extremely controversial. We hear this in the news also. There is an epidemic in Florida of people who are addicted to pain medications. So the CDC came out with recommendations on how to prescribe opioids, which are pain medications. And they came out with 12 different recommendations. And they started off, and we know in the state of Florida, when you prescribe a pain medication that has an opioid in it, that you have, that medication needs to be written on special non-copy paper, that there is a database in the state of Florida where every doctor that prescribes pain pills is going to be, they keep track of that, and every patient that has a prescription for pain pills, who, what doctor they got it from, and also what pharmacies. And the pharmacists, when they are filling those prescriptions, are obligated to review this database. So it's another layer of work. And so one of the problems with that people have been prescribed pain pills for minor problems. So their first recommendation is that they prefer non-pharmacologic and non-opioid therapy is preferred for chronic pain. And they really want the CDC to have clinicians look at the risk and the benefits. Now, we're talking about chronic pain. Again, I put in a separate category, and most doctors do, someone who is dying, such as end-stage cancer, where they may have pain. I put that in a different category. We're talking about people who come in and who may have chronic pain from other problems. And they said that if you do use an opioid, then you need to speak to the patient and have a therapy combined with, like, for example, anti-inflammatories where appropriate. That the second recommendation for a clinician is that before you start opiate therapy for chronic pain, now I want you to know, pain management is now a specialty. That is not my specialty. My specialty is, you know, lipids and hormone balancing and women in menopause and men in andropause, age management. But I bring this up on the radio show so that you all out there know and hear what's happening. Part of what I try to do is bring the latest information. So the CDC is recommending, and if anybody has a question, give us a call at 206-1580, that before starting opioid therapy, that goals should be established, both for pain and function, and to discontinue the therapy if the benefits far outweigh the risk. It's very important. With everything we eat, medicines, there's always a benefit and a risk. That before starting and periodically during opioid therapy, clinicians should discuss the risk with the patient, that's the third recommendation, and realistic benefits and responsibilities for managing therapy. And if you do, the fourth recommendation, if you do recommend opiate, you should start off with immediate release instead of long-acting opiates. That when the fifth recommendation is that when opiates are started, clinicians should prescribe the lowest effective dosage. Well, you know, I kind of see that as a no-brainer because in anything that we prescribe, the lowest dose that does the job is what we should go with. Clinicians should use caution when prescribing opiates at any dosage. And again, we need to reassess the dosage and the benefit and try to go again with the lowest dosage available that will take care of the problem. Now, also to know that decision, if you need to increase the dosage, you need to document why and what is the benefit. That the sixth recommendation, that long-term opiate use often begins with treatment of acute pain. And that you should give someone the medicine for the shortest time possible. And they're saying that 3 days or less will often be sufficient for acute pain. And that rarely 7 or more days are needed. Now, this is the CDC's recommendations. That the seventh recommendation is that clinicians should evaluate both benefit and harms with patients within 1 to 4 weeks after starting opiate therapy. You know, opiates have a lot of side effects, including they can sedate you, they can interact with alcohol. Also, opiates can cause major constipation. So, you know, it's not without certain side effects that, you know, that needs to be thought of.
Not to mention addiction.
Addiction, yes, but the other side effects. So clinicians should evaluate benefits, and if the patient needs continued therapy, they need to be evaluated at the very least every 3 months, okay? Or more frequently. So you shouldn't wait and you give somebody pain medications for a year and then you never see the patient again. That is not in with the recommendations. The recommendations is that that patient needs to be seen frequently to, again, assess the benefit, the risk, and their functional level. I think that's because a lot of times patients will say, in a lot of medications, they'll say, can't you just give me a year supply or a year prescription? Well, everything that I prescribe, which for your blood pressure, your cholesterol, your diabetes, has benefit and risk. And that needs to be evaluated ongoing. It's not like you give somebody medication and you put them on autopilot. I mean, it doesn't, you know, if the medicine you need to evaluate, is the medicine achieving the goal? For example, is the diabetic medication, are we achieving the goals that we have stated? What is our goal? Again, on the visits, we try to recommend certain goals, what your cholesterol should be, what your blood sugar should be, what your blood pressure should be. So just giving a pill is not caring for a patient. And I just want people to understand that. You know, we as doctors are educated and have a lot of experience and studies. And it's not you go to the doctor and you get a pill. That's not taking care of a patient. There's more to it. There is assessing, is this medication working? Is it causing any harm? Does it have any side effects that we need to monitor? For example, some medications can affect your kidneys. Some medications can affect your eyes, your bones. What are we doing to benefit you? And that's why I know a lot of people will come to a doctor and say, I want a pill. Well, so many things, so many diseases that we have, we can actually improve upon without taking medications, with lifestyle, with diet, with quitting the bad habits like smoking, over-consuming alcohol. And I think those are simple little things that we can do. And that's one of the reasons that when someone comes to me and they said, you know, I'm not sleeping good. I have so much night sweats and hot flashes. And or the men say, I just don't have the energy. I don't have the interest in sex. You know, what I can do to help them with the bioidentical hormone pellets is the most incredible thing. Because I am balancing the hormones so that patient heals from the inside out. And we try to restore their hormones. So going back to the CDC recommendation for opioids. Again, the number 8 is before starting and even during continuation of opioid therapy, clinicians, again, should weigh the risk factors and the possible harms. and include this into a management plan. Now, some patients become addicted, and there is an antidote called naloxone that may help the patients. We know that there is a rising heroin addiction in this country, and many of the first responders are being equipped with the antidote, which is naloxone. Also, it's recommended do not use with these pain medications benzodiazepines. Do not. And if, because though they can also affect the dosage and the effect of the opioids. What is a benzodiazepine? Well, that's the family of, these medicines are in are called like Klonopin, Xanax, Restoril, Ativan, Valium. Those are benzodiazepines. And combining those medications with alcohol and other medications and opioids can be a cocktail for disaster. And that's really important. Patients, clinicians should also review the patient's control history. In other words, history of controlled substance prescriptions. There are certain state prescription drug monitoring programs. You should know what the interaction is with other medications. And not prescribe the medications long-term without follow-up. Some clinicians, the CDC recommends that they use urine drug testing before starting therapy. And consider using urine drug testing on a yearly basis to see if the patient is using either other prescription drugs or illicit drugs. Clinicians should avoid prescribing, as we have said, benzodiazepine and pain medications. And clinicians should offer or arrange treatment for patients if they feel they have become addicted. And again, there are specialists who deal with both the psychological and physical aspect of drug addiction. So that would be also can be considered, and that clinician may want to refer the patient to a specialist. So the most important thing is that prevention, assessment, and treatment of chronic pain. Again, that is not my realm of specialty, but I wanted to discuss it today because I want people to understand when you go to your doctor and you do have pain for some acute problem, be careful and think about what we've been talking about. There is no reason for somebody to have to take, chronic pain pills if it's something that was an acute problem. For example, like getting your tooth pulled or maybe you had major surgery. Opiates are a serious problem. They include the issues and problems of overdose and overuse. There have been, from 1999 to 2014, more than 165 persons have died from overdose related to opioid pain medication in the United States. Wow, that's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot. And these guidelines were put out by the CDC to help the clinician in their treatment of chronic pain. This is, again, an epidemic that we need to look at. And in that vein, again, I find that a lot of times patients will come and make a new patient appointment and they don't know what medications they're on. Please, if you make a patient appointment, for example, myself, I'm a primary care physician and I have patients who come in and we tell them on their first visit, bring your medications that you're on, both supplements and prescription medications. We need to know. There's an article that was very important that discusses, and this was in JAMA, about the use of potentially lethal drug combinations. And unfortunately, these combinations are greater in the elderly. A number of older patients are using combinations of medications, which are danger, danger. Like, remember the danger, Will Robinson?
Yes.
Lost in Space? And this has doubled in the past 5 years. Now, this was an article in JAMA, Internal Medicine. So I feel that one of the most important things, again, is that patients bring their medication to their first visit and in subsequent visits bring their medicines. It doesn't, you know, we're at a time now where each one of us should know why we're taking what we're taking and what it's for. I think patients need to be proactive in their health care. And being proactive means knowing what you're on and why you're on it. You cannot and always either and it, always have a list with you, and if there was an emergency. And when you go to your physician, you need to bring your medications. Now, some patients see more than one doctor. Maybe they see the lung specialist. Maybe they see the cardiologist. Maybe they see the endocrinologist. Maybe they ended up in the emergency room and the medications were changed. Maybe they were in the hospital and medicines were changed. Maybe the cardiologist put them on a different medication. You need to bring your medications in to your family doctor so an assessment can be made. The problem is this, is that a lot of people will be put on a medicine, but maybe the other doctors don't have a good grasp for what other medicines they're on. And we could avoid these problem or dangerous combinations if we have the knowledge of what you're on. And when I say medications, I don't just mean prescription medications, non-prescription medications, and also supplements. All these can affect the way the medicine that you're on is metabolized. There are enzymes in our liver that metabolize medications. Some medications are metabolized through your kidneys. So if we use two of the same medication, think about it, and they're both competing for that same enzyme to be broken down, that enzyme is not enough to do both. Well, those medicines the dosage will go up in your blood. So if that happens, then you have to think that could be something dangerous. So the dosage that's prescribed may be one dosage, but because it wasn't broken down, that dosage will go up in your blood. It will become more concentrated because it wasn't broken down. Or it may interact with another medication. You know, this is called polypharmacy, and each one of us needs to play a very active role. As you know, I'm a family doctor, and I'm the only doctor in Charlotte County who has their boards in lipids. I'm a lipidologist and also the only doctor who's a certified menopause practitioner and the only doctor also that does bioidentical bio-T therapy in Charlotte County. And when someone comes and they want me to balance their hormones, that dosage for each patient is individualized based on their blood levels. However, when patients come in, even if it's just whether it be for primary care, consultations for hormones, or consultations for lipids, I need to know what medicines or supplements you're on. It's very, very important. And that way I can understand the patient better. If someone is on medicine for diabetes and they're a primary care physician, you know, they're looking for a primary care physician and their blood sugars are not well controlled, well, then I know and I can adjust the medicine or change the medicine or add a different medication. Again, this is in conjunction with diet and exercise. Everyone out there knows I am committed and I have a passion to take care of my patients and to help them to be as healthy as possible and to feel good. And as we said, to have a more gratifying, intimate life. Because again, an intimate life should be a forever life. And if you are looking for someone to help you with this, you could call my office and make an appointment at 625-1990. And remember, next time you go to see your doctor, take your medicines, put it in a little brown bag, and bring your medicines, supplements. Be upfront with what you're on. This is Dr. Elizabeth Triana, and this is the Dr. Triana Show. Happy Easter, happy health, stay healthy, and God bless.